More people every day are ditching animal products, embracing plant-based foods, and speaking up for what matters. With my experience as an international instructor for vegan nutrition and an award-winning author, I interview experts, innovators, and celebrities about the global movement towards a plant-based future. Do you want to learn how to combat the injustice in our food system affecting your health, the animals, and the planet? Well, you're in the right place. It all starts here with Eating Like You Give a Damn.
Welcome to the Eating Like You Give a Damn show, the place to discover your passion for plant-based living, one bite at a time. I'm your host, Stephanie Harder. As we are recording this, we are streaming live from the Eating Like You Give a Damn Facebook page. So if you've been listening to the show for a while and you want to watch the show live or to catch the replays, just head on over to the Eating Like You Give a Damn Facebook page and be sure to click the thumbs up button to like the page. That way you'll be notified when we go live with our guests. First, I want to welcome all of the viewers that are here right now. So throw us a high five emoji just to say hello. This episode is brought to you by my program for plant-powered health and wellness coaches called Foundation to Freedom. Foundation to Freedom helps vegan, vegetarian, and plant-based wellness coaches earn a full-time income doing what they love while making a big impact with their purpose-driven mission. Now, I have a detailed free guide that shows coaches exactly how to do that. Go to coaches.eatinglikeyougiveadamn.com to get your copy today. Now, let's get going with what's cooking, because today we are chatting with Renee King Sonnen, who is the founder and executive director of Rowdy Girls Sanctuary. What's up, Renee?
Hi, how are you doing? Glad to be here.
Glad to have you, girl. Rowdy Girls Sanctuary is a 501c3 nonprofit with some incredible initiatives. One is the Rancher Advocacy Program, which transitions cattle ranchers and animal farmers out of animal agribusiness. And another initiative is Families Choosing Compassion, which is a compassionate alternative to Future Farmers of America and 4-H. Now, since going vegan in 2014, Renee converted Rowdy Girl Sanctuary from a cattle ranch to a sanctuary for over 120 animals, which is the first documented beef cattle ranch vegan conversion in history. And we'll hear from Renee what her husband, who was a cattle rancher, had to say about that. Now, she is a born and raised Texan and a true pioneer for the movement towards a plant-based future with her education initiatives. Are you ready to dig in, Renee?
Always.
Always. Fantastic.
Always.
Awesome. Well, my love, let's go ahead and start out by unraveling your vegan story. So if we go back to, you know, Renee before she became vegan, you know, what did that look like? How did you grow up? What was your idea about food? And then what happened that made you take the turn to Veganville?
Renee before I went vegan, that is such a different person. Renee before I went vegan was, I mean, I was born in Houston, Texas. I was the typical Texas girl that had a collection of leather boots, leather clothes, you know, exotic snakeskin leather, you know, silk. I went to rodeos, chili cook-offs, barbecue cook-offs, you name it. I was the Texan that, you know, that loved all things, you know, all things Texas. And then when you are raised in Texas, using animals left and right in your food, on your clothes, entertainment, it's like everything revolves around using animals in Texas, you know, for the most part. And we're so predisposed to that lifestyle that we don't even think twice about it without really being given the opportunity to contemplate and make our own decisions. Most people never change. They are a Texan through and through. In fact, you know, going against that Texas algorithm is like almost taboo, you know, because it's so ingrained in our psyche. So Renee before Veganville is that true blue Texas girl, you know, and for me, when I went vegan, One of the interesting things is, even though I was a true blue Texan, I was also a yogini. I've always resonated with, you know, like the yoga sciences. And so I am a certified hatha yoga teacher, kundalini yoga teacher, Ayurveda practitioner. You know, I'll be 62 next month. So I've lived a while, and I've had, I studied deeply, you know, the teachings of yoga, and I chant in Sanskrit. I chant in Gurmukh, you know, when I need to, replenish myself. You know, I go back to what I used to do before I was vegan, which is go into lots of days of silence. I used to do and still do silent retreats. I even have gone vegetarian and plant-based because of my yogic, you know, teachings, you know, because of the whole science and, you know, of ahimsa, nonviolence, you know, the philosophy more or less. I went vegetarian and plant-based because of the teachings I was learning, but not because I had any direct relationship with the animals I was eating. Uh-huh. So it made sense to me, but it didn't ever stick. And so when I married Tommy for the second time, that's when it was just a few years down the road. He had that cattle ranch, and I always fancied myself a girl that loved animals. And I began to get, you know, I began to have real relationships with animals that I eat, you know, I mean, not those animals, but I would eat other animals just like them. And I began to have real disconnect. And so I went vegan on October 31st, 2014. And after that, it was my poor husband, you know, it just made his whole life change 100%. So.
Oh, I bet it turned like upside down completely, didn't it?
Oh my God. His whole world changed.
Oh my goodness. Now, was there any one particular, particularly moving moment that you had that just kind of, I don't know, just kind of launched you into this going vegan on a specific day? Because I know for most people, they kind of inch their way into it. You know, they're kind of working their way towards that as like a goal. But, you know the specific date. So was there that one thing that just happened and you just said, ah, done?
No, I just went vegan. No, of course. Of course. Oh my God. Yeah, thank you for asking. The day I went vegan, it's so weird. It was on Halloween. And it really was a scary day for me. It was so scary because I had just watched Melanie Joy. Do you know her?
I do. I love her. Oh my goodness. Dr. Melanie Joy.
Dr. Melanie Joy. I had watched her dissertation on carnism. Mm. Okay. And those of you that know that little dissertation, it's about this family that's eating beef stew, you know, around a table. You know what I'm talking about? That one?
I do. Definitely explain it though, because a lot of listeners don't know.
Yes. So anyway, what happened leading up to that day on Halloween 2014 is, prior to that, my husband had retired from Dow Chemical. I was really, really struggling with what we were doing in the business. It took me 4 years to go vegan. 4 years of torturing myself because I was really having relationships with animals that the same kind that I used to eat. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, being married to a cattle rancher and not only a cattle rancher, but a man that I love so much, married not once, but twice, it was so hard for me to consider not being with him again because we'd already been married once. And now here it is the second time. So I was forced or faced with so many ethical problems every time we took the animals to the sale barn or every time the trailer came to take the animals to the sale barn. And every time it happened, I would go into deeper, deeper depression. I would begin to really question, you know, why we were doing this horrible business. Why couldn't we do something else? And so I was constantly forcing my husband to answer questions he didn't want to answer. You know, because I'm the kind of girl that wants to understand. I want to believe in what I'm doing. I want it to all make sense, and it wasn't. And so one day I said to him, why aren't we eating the animals on our farm? How come we send them cows to slaughter, but we don't eat them, but we still eat animals at the store. And he was like, well, you know, I don't want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't care if you want to talk about it or not. We're going to talk about it. I got to feel like what I'm doing matters. And, you know, this feels really wrong to me to be sending animals that we know to the sale barn and then eating the animals we don't know that could be their cousins or their mothers or their daddies or their kids. Why are we doing that? He said, Renee, you're asking too many questions. I said, well, you know, I'm going to keep asking those questions because I want answers. And so finally he started answering me. You know, he started saying stuff like, well, Renee, I can't eat animals I know. And when he said, I can't eat animals I know, I knew there was a problem. I said, so you can eat animals you don't know, but you can't eat animals you do know. So what's the difference? I know them, but their backside is the same. You know, it could be my ass for, excuse me, am I not supposed to say that word?
No, you can.
It could be my butt. I mean, really, I mean, what difference does it make? And he said, Renee, you need to stop asking all these questions. Well, I wouldn't stop asking the questions. I kept asking the questions. And before you know it, I got to a place where I was watching slaughterhouse videos every single day. I was trying to make sense of what we were doing. I was trying to understand what happened to these cows. And Tommy, bless his heart, he was like, Renee, why do you keep watching all this? I would cry every single day. Every single day I was crying towards the end before I watched the Melanie Joy dissertation. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stop because I'd finally... You know, the more questions I asked, the more answers I needed. And if he wasn't going to answer them, I was going to go find the answers myself. And that's what started happening. And so then I started going to my husband. I started to say, well, this is what I learned today. This is what I learned today. And we're, you know, from now on, by God, we're going to get our own milk and our own cheese and our own eggs. We're going to eat everything ethically sourced. And we're going to have our own, you know, we're going to kill one of our own animals. Which one's it going to be? You go out there and you pick one. Tell me which one it's going to be, because we're going to kill one of our animals. We're going to bring the whole neighborhood together. We're going to go in together and we're going to kill one, slaughter it. Which one? He said, Renee, we're not going to do that. I said, yes, we are. Yes, we are. I've been doing my research, and that's the way I will feel good about it, is if we are eating our own animals. And so, you know, as crazy as that sounds, that's what led me to going vegan. Because it was this culmination of little steps that I kept taking, because I kept discovering along the way that there is no ethical way to do the wrong thing. You know, as much as, you know, Meatless Mondays and the, you know, humane meat and all these things, I mean, I know there's a purpose for those platforms, but there is no humane way to do the wrong thing. You just can't do it. Now, I didn't know that then. And so it took these steps to get me to where I am today, to where on October 31st, 2014, when I had literally driven myself crazy watching all these slaughterhouse videos, I wasn't vegan. I wasn't even going vegan, okay? I wasn't consciously going vegan. I was married to a cattle rancher that was trying to get answers.
Right.
I was trying to get answers. I had fallen in love with these cows. Rowdy Girl was my vegan advocate silently. I didn't know she was trying to teach me to go vegan, but she was. And then when I watched Melanie Joy's dissertation and they were all eating the beef stew around the table, everybody's enjoying the stew, and somebody says, what's the recipe? And she says, well, you start off with a pound of very young golden retriever.
I was just like, yes.
What? I stopped dead in my tracks. I think my brain stopped working for a minute, because it was in that moment that I had a moment of clarity where I was like, oh my God, it could be a baby puppy and I wouldn't know it. It could be my grandma's hip bone and I wouldn't know it. All chopped up in little pieces floating around in a bowl that I'm calling beef stew. I had this moment where I actually realized that, and I'd never before in my life seen it that way. Mm. I didn't say that out loud at the time, but I did that night. when I went to my mother-in-law's house. It was Halloween, and there was a big festival going on at the house and on the street, you know, with all the kids in their costumes, the little Halloween parade every year that went down, you know, my mother-in-law's street. And we were all there. The kids were there. My in-laws were there. My outlaws were there. Everybody was having a good time. Everybody's really, really having a good time. We walk in, and my mother-in-law brings out a pot of beef stew.
Ooh.
And my ears started buzzing. My ears buzzed. My mouth dropped open, and I was like, I can't eat that. And she didn't even ask me, really. I mean, I just said, I can't, that's over. I can't eat that. And she says, well, why not, Renee? I mean, I love the beef stew, you know? And I said, because it's got floating dead hacked up animal bodies in it. That's it. No more. And she was like, she looked at me with this look on her face.
Oh, I can imagine.
Everybody in the room stopped talking. I mean, everybody stopped talking. And what? I said, it's got floating dead hacked up animal bodies in this bowl. And they were like, well, Renee? And my mother-in-law says, well, you can pick it out. And I said, no, ma'am. There ain't no more picking it out for me. I went vegan that moment.
Wow.
It was that moment. I remember it like it was yesterday.
And you tell that story so, so well with the visualizations and everything. That's so helpful to help more people understand, you know, that there's plenty of people that just, they're not making the connection, or they've made the connection and they just don't feel pulled by that as a reason to really get the lifestyle, I suppose. But the way that you just... The way that you just said that is just so crystal clear on the way that many vegans, you know, once we actually get to that point where it's like you said, it's usually a series of things that we start to hear or start to pay attention to, and it just kind of strikes us the wrong way. We feel like, you know, we feel like all of a sudden these lies are being uncovered. We feel like there's something pulling at our heartstrings. We don't understand what's going on. And like you said, I mean, it can send you right into a depression.
You did.
And that's the importance too of actually finding community with other like-minded individuals who kind of get that and being able to learn from each other. So that's really amazing. Are you taking a picture? That's awesome. So now you mentioned Rowdy Girl, and I would love to hear about how Rowdy Girl plays into all of this for you.
Well, you know, it's so funny that her name is Rowdy Girl. You know, everybody thinks I'm Rowdy Girl, and I am Rowdy for sure.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
For sure. I know. But, you know, a lot of people think I'm Rowdy Girl. They think that, you know, that this sanctuary is named after me because I think I'm Rowdy. That is not true. Rowdy Girl is a cow. She's still alive. She lives here with a number of her family members. Lucky, which was the one that was going to be killed and slaughtered, the one that we decided we were going to kill and slaughter, is Lucky. He's still here. He never was killed and slaughtered. That's Rowdy Girl's firstborn son. And then there's Houdini, her daughter that, oh my God, I just love that girl. You know, Houdini, I used to always say, and she, I never had my own kids. And Rowdy Girl is like, I don't know, she's just like my daughter or something, and Houdini's like my granddaughter. I feel this connection to these animals like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's another Stella is one of Rowdy Girl's, and also Magic. And so Rowdy Girl has her family with her, Lucky, Houdini, Stella, and Magic. Wow. They're here. And Rowdy Girl was a calf that I bought for $300 in probably 2010, you know, before we were vegan, obviously. And I raised her up, you know, bottle feeding her. And my husband wanted me to get more involved with cattle ranching because I just wasn't interested in all of that when I moved in. I mean, I was into yoga, like I was telling you, meditation, and I was into all that stuff. I didn't really want to open fences or open gates, help him with the hay, you know, wear mud boots, go out there in the pastures with him to help him with a cow that was down. I wasn't into that stuff. he could have it. You know, I just wasn't. Yeah. I am now. But when I started feeding Rowdy Girl, something changed. It all backfired on my husband. Tommy thought, well, we'll get Rowdy Girl. See, he told me about it. And then she'll get more involved with the cattle ranching business. This was his fault. But what happened was I started, she was a conduit for me. Mm-hmm. Because when I was feeding Rowdy Girl, I was watching the other calves and the mamas. I began to see with my own eyes that they had a family unit, that there was a community out there that I'd never seen before. It was as if I was like Alice in Wonderland going down, you know, taking a pill when I was feeding Rowdy Girl, and I would go down a whole different channel where a whole different reality lived. And that's what happened when I was with Rowdy Girl. And I would just be in a trance, and I would be watching, and I couldn't believe I was seeing a babysitter emerge. I would watch Tippy, you know, and Tippy was like always the freaking babysitter. I would watch the mother cows out there when I was feeding Rowdy Girl. I would watch them go over to Tippy, and then I would watch Tippy go with a mama to where the baby is, and then I'd watch the mama go off and get hay and feed and water or whatever, and Tippy would stay with the baby. And I was like, you're doing that on purpose. Well, of course they are. But why is it, you know, but the reason why we don't think they're doing it on purpose is because of the conditioning, the lies. I mean, come on, Animal Ag has billions of dollars to make sure that we're lied to. And so, you know, we're lied to, you know, to believe these facts, if you will. We're lied to believe facts that animal agriculture puts out about, you know, animals' feelings that just aren't true. I'm sorry. Animals have just as much feelings for their families, probably more so, to tell you the truth, than we do. You know, and so Rowdy Girl became that conduit for me. And it became more and more difficult for me to separate myself. So when I would quit feeding Rowdy Girl, I would, you know, have to go, okay, shake it off, go in there, be a good cattle rancher's wife. You know, I mean, I didn't say those words to myself, but looking back now, that's what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was shaking off the reality of what I was experiencing to be true for myself, to live the lie that was a cattle rancher's wife in a system that was entrenched in animal agriculture. You know, we were bought into that lie. So that's what happened. Rowdy Girl was my conduit. She was my vegan advocate.
Wow. And so now that brings us around to how you ended up converting from a cattle ranch farm into a sanctuary. So tell us that piece of the story and you know, what your husband had to say about that.
Tommy was not happy. Let me tell you, the most unlikely thing in the world. I mean, you know, if I could have tried to muster up this kind of story to get some kind of attention, I could have never made this up. You know, this had to be the perfect, you know, alignment of passion and the movement that I didn't even know existed at the time wanted exactly what was happening to me. It was like when I started seeing all this with my own eyes, I began to get so distressed that I started finding friends on Facebook that were vegan. And I didn't tell my husband about it. I went vegan on October 31st. And from that moment on, I was like, I was keyboard warrioring it. I was looking for vegans everywhere. I mean, I was on a mission to find vegans. You know, all I knew is I was now vegan, and I was going to, because I'd learned about veganism online, but I wasn't vegan and I didn't even know I was going vegan. But then there I was, vegan, you know, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I'm a vegan. You know, I got to find vegan friends. I have no vegan friends.
Because there's probably not many where, you know, where you live in that area.
There was none. No. And so I stumbled upon this registry, you know, I'm the vegan registry, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, the global vegan registry. And so, and oh my God, it was probably 2 a.m, you know, I was up and I did something, I typed something, and this lady named Jeannie Westfall, she lives in Oregon, messaged me back. And do you know, we're still friends to this day, but she talked to me. She's been to the sanctuary. She let me cry. She let me call her and cry. And Jeannie became my first vegan friend.
Nice.
And she said to me one day, probably the second or third day I knew her, not too long after, because I was crying. I was a mess. It was as if all the feelings I had inside of me were like out here. And I don't know how else to explain it except, you know, when I went vegan, it was like something inside of me flipped and everything, I could feel it ultra sensitive. And I couldn't stop crying. I couldn't stand my husband. He was a murderer in my eyes. And I told him so. I said, you're just nothing but a effing murderer. And well, you did this and you did. So we were fighting all the time. And Jeannie was my refuge. And she said to me one day, Renee, you need a blog. You need to do something to get all your feelings out on social media. I was like, what? Really? What do you think? She said, a Facebook page, you know? Get you a Facebook page, you know? And I had a Facebook page for a business we had before in my singing career. So I never thought of that. And I thought, really? You think? I mean, why would anybody care about this? Oh, Renee, you would be surprised. And so, you know, she said, yeah, you know, just write you, you know, a journal or something. So I called it Vegan Journal of a Rancher's Wife. And it's still active today. It's called Vegan Journal of a Rancher's Wife. I have somebody else that posts on there now, because that's the one page right now that I've had to kind of let somebody else help me with, because I've got Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. I mean, we got so many platforms now,
right?
That I have trouble with it. And so, but anyway, Vegan Journal of a Rancher's Wife started gaining hundreds of followers. Like every day there was hundreds more. I just would type all my feelings, everything I was going through. And next thing you know, it's being shared out. I like to say that the world knew I was vegan and that I needed help before my next door neighbor did. I had an outpouring of love come at me from the vegan community. That's how I ended up finally doing the fundraiser to buy my husband's cows, because Tommy, you know, was not a willing vegan. I had to literally shove veganism down his throat. And I did. I was not willing to just give up on this man. So every time I'd get a documentary, you know, I'd make him watch it. And I say make him, okay? I mean, I'm not, you know, shy. And so I go in there and say, you gotta watch this. Cowspiracy, you know, Forks Over Knives, Food Matters, Harold Brown's Peaceable Kingdom, you name it. He didn't watch Earthlings, but he would watch all these videos, and something started to happen. He started to see. And while he was watching these videos, he began to realize, you know, that his dad had died of a heart attack. And, you know, maybe he wasn't getting it on the ethical level, but he was getting it on the health side. He was health conscious. And so in all of that, me and my husband had a showdown, because he was going to sell all the cows. He was just going to get out of the business. This was probably sometime in November. And he was just going to sell out. And I said, no, you can't do that. You can't sell out. You just can't do that. And he said, well, Renee, what else am I going to do? What are you going to do to stop me? No, this was sometime in November. And this was before he knew I had a journal. He didn't know I had the vegan journal. It was a secret. And I said, well, if you're going to sell all the cows, just let me buy them. And he says, you buy my cows? And I said, yes, because I'd already been talking to all my friends on Facebook. You know, I'd been talking about this, you know, what are we going to do? We'll buy your husband's cows. Well, how am I going to do that? We'll have a fundraiser. You know, well, who knows how to do that? Have you talked to Kip Anderson? No, who's that? They tell me who Kip Anderson was. I found Kip Anderson. I got him on the phone. He told me how to do a fundraiser to buy my husband's cows. So I'd already set all this up. And so when I talked to Tommy, he was like, what are you going to do? I said, well, will you let me buy them? And so he didn't think I would do it. But he said, okay, yeah, sure, Renee. I'll let you buy my cows. And I said, so how much will you sell them to your wife for? So he says, oh, let me see. He was just kidding, right? He didn't think I'd do this. He said, oh, I could probably get 35,000-40,000 at market right now. I'll give them to you for 30. I said, will you let me lease the land for $1 a year? He said, sure, Renee. What are you doing? You're going to buy my cows? I said, well, I'm going to certainly give it my best. And so he said, all right, sure. Well, in less than 4 months, I raised $36,000.
Woo!
Rest is her story.
That's right. And that is such an incredible story too. Wow. So what's the general reaction that you get from other ranchers in your area or other ranchers that you talk to when they hear your story? What's the reaction?
You know, other ranchers, people ask me this all the time. It's so funny that, you know, that's the reason we have the Rancher Advocacy Program, is because ranchers, by and large, have reached out to me because of our story. Our story's gone viral on many platforms. And so, you know, on TV, you know, on magazines and blogs, there's just been a lot of viral activity on our story. And so our story has landed in the laps of everyday ranchers and farmers. And every rancher I know loves animals and kills them. You know, It's not every rancher I know does that. They love animals. They love the land, yet they kill animals and destroy the land. It's because they just aren't educated to know. You know, I wasn't, my husband wasn't, but we still loved animals, but we knew how to, you know, we had to disconnect.
Yeah.
You have to. The only way you can do that is to disconnect, because you've got to feed the planet. You got to feed the world. And so this is what you have to do in order to get a result, is you have to take the animals to the sale barn and you have to sell them, even though you don't like it. He never liked it. He never liked doing that. He just didn't think about that part of it. And that's what all cattle ranchers are like that. All the ones I know anyway. And so most cattle ranchers have no problem with what we do.
Right.
Well, none whatsoever.
Yeah. And it seems like, we've really been conditioned since really young to compartmentalize, you know, especially if it's something that we could have a strong emotional reaction to. So we're really good at compartmentalizing things that maybe strike a discord with who we truly are. And so, you know, I just really think that everybody that's a cattle rancher, they're all good people. Everybody, we're all good meaning people. We all are, right? We want to do the right thing. We want to do what's best for humanity. And we've been raised to believe that raising animals for food is doing the world a service. So what do you say to that?
Well, what I say to that is, you know, it is conditioning. It is programming. You know, I read a book. It's a great book. I recommend everybody read Dr. Will Tuttle's book, The World Peace Diet. If you haven't read it, make it your textbook. He talks in there about the herding culture. It's interesting, H-E-R-D-I-N-G versus herding culture, right? Mm-hmm. The herding culture started about 10,000 years ago. And so 10,000 years ago, before man started herding animals, animals roamed free. We didn't herd them and sell them, buy them and sell them and all that. It wasn't part of the deal. And so when we started doing that, it became normalized. So normalized violence is a result of thousands of years ago to where now it's not just, you know, these herds of animals out in field somewhere. Now they're all confined in, you know, in feedlots and, you know, in horrible confinement. So what do I say to that? It's not normal to do what we're doing to animals. And all the farmers and ranchers are doing right now, they're not the bad guys. The system is corrupt. The system is broke. The system is so, so terrible. And everyday farmers and ranchers are plugged into this system out of what they feel is a need. And also because their fathers did it, their grandfathers did it, their great-grandfathers, it's all this. But the system has become this toxic, horrible, you know, way that we have learned to interface in our world, and it's normalized violence.
Right.
And so that's what I say to that.
Yeah. And this is a perfect segue to move into talking about the Rancher Advocacy Program. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got started with that and what you're doing in that program.
The Rancher Advocacy Program, one day, one of my associates, Nikki Bolaire, and I were talking, and we were discussing, you know, what Rowdy Girl Sanctuary was going to have as its programming. You know, what programs were we going to have? Because we're not even five yet. And so she was like, you know, Renee, every sanctuary has, you know, programs. And she said, so what do you think you could offer that nobody else is doing? And I was like, well, give me some ideas. So she would, you know, tell me what Farm Sanctuary was doing, or Gentle Barn, or, you know, whatever. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I said, what's unique, I guess. I don't know if it could be a program or not, but I'm not only an animal rights advocate, but I'm a rancher's advocate. And she said, really? Tell me more. I said, well, because at that time, I hadn't even told anybody. I just had quiet conversations all the time with ranchers, their families, their next door neighbors, their employees. I just had people calling me all the time or messaging me, you know, wanting to talk to me about their feelings they have for animals, or, you know, because they can't talk to anybody else. I mean, this is not something you can talk about if you're a cattle rancher. You can't talk about these feelings you're having for animals with anybody. You can't talk about it with your cattle rancher friends. They're going to think you're crazy. You know, you got to suck that shit up. You know, you got to do what you got to do to make a living. You know, don't be no pansy ass. Right.
Right.
I mean, and so finally what started to happen, because our story went viral, ranchers' wives would call me, and they would be like trying to act like they were talking about somebody else, and they were really talking about their own feelings. And I could figure all this out. I could tell what was up. And so anyway, these conversations started happening, and I told Nikki about it, and I said, you know, I said, I don't know if this could become a program or not. She said, I think it could. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? She said, I want you to get it all on paper, and we'll write a first draft on this program. What do you want to call it? I said, well, I guess the Rancher Advocacy Program. And so that's what happened. And after that, it just started pouring out of me. It was obvious. I had no idea that it was going to become what it is today. I mean, we launched the Rancher Advocacy Program July. We were 1 year old. August, wow. September, October, November, December, January, February. Yeah. So we're a year and a half old, RAP is.
Yeah.
And we've got three farms in our program, another one coming on. And yeah.
That is so cool. Okay. So now what are these farms working on converting to?
Well, the one that is most in the limelight right now, have you seen the video that Mercy for Animals just put out on the Barrett Family Farm conversion?
No, I have not. Tell me more.
Oh my God. It's going viral right now. You need to watch it. It's already probably up right at 30,000 views, and it was just launched a few days ago.
Oh my goodness.
And it's supposed to go on a really bigger platform. I can't tell you who yet, because I don't know if it's out yet. So the one that's out right now by Mercy for Animals is a 10-minute little mini documentary on the Barrett Family Farm, two chicken farmers in Wicks, Arkansas, Jennifer and Rodney Barrett, that are with RAPS. Help our funding with our funders and what we're doing. We're converting their former poultry barns into a mushroom farm.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It's totally awesome. And we've been able to save 240 cows from going to slaughter.
Wow. Well, congratulations with that. That's incredible. So essentially, you are helping these farms become financially sustainable as they're making this conversion. And then that way, this is like a legacy for their family members who are taking over in years to come, right?
That's exactly the goal. But I tell you,
yeah,
you know, every farmer is going to be different. You know, some farmers are deeply in debt. I mean, because, you know, like when you listen to that video of the Barretts, and it's on my YouTube channel too. If you go to Rowdy Girl Sanctuary's YouTube,
okay,
you can find it there. It's like the first one there because I put it up there. You know, every farmer is going to have a different level of debt. And, you know, that's the kind of assessment we do. We assess each farm. Everybody's different. The Barretts were in tremendous debt because, to hear them put it, they were indentured servants to Tyson.
Wow.
And I'm just telling you what they said, you know,
sure.
Because, you know, when these big contract, whatever you call those, Tyson, what do you call them? They're called integrators. Mm-hmm. When they make, you know, these big old fat bonuses every year, but all the farmers get is a ham and a box of chocolates, something's wrong.
Right.
And that's the way it is. I mean, these farmers are indebted over their eyeballs to these big integrators like Tyson and others. I mean, it just is. It just is what it is. And so the Barretts, you know, we've had to work for the last 9 months with my team. We have a coalition. You know, RAP is not just me. My vision for RAP was to have an entire coalition of professionals, vegans, that worked with me in every facet of a farmer's transition. We've got business plans. We've got financial advisors. We've got legal advice. We've got, you know, counsel on land grants. We've got, you know, you name it. We've got, you know, more and more people coming into our coalition. Universities now, you know, Harvard's expressing an interest in coming into our coalition.
Cool.
Because we got to have that academic perspective.
Yeah.
It's got to be. And so it's just so important to have a coalition, everybody working together to change these farms. Because now what you're seeing in the movement, you're starting to see now that, you know, there's all these little fractions, everybody's starting to talk about, you know, wanting to transition farms, but you can't do it from the top down.
Mm.
You know, you can't transition farms because you think you have a good idea and you do some research and have a brainstorm.
Right.
You hurt a lot of farmers that way. And it's happened.
Mm.
And so what RAP does is we really work from the bottom up with our farmers. People like not only me, but Jerry Devereaux, who was on my staff. She's an organizational developer, and she grew up on a farm. Paul Berry, he grew up on a farm. He's a Rowdy Girl board member and also our chief, business plan advisor. And these folks help us counsel the ranchers and farmers because they've been there. These ranchers and farmers do not want to hear from a vegan most of the time.
Mm, true.
But if they can hear from former cattle ranchers or dairy farmers that are now vegan, that are doing something different and are trying to help them, they'll listen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really great. And it's great to hear that, you know, more people are open to hearing, you know, hearing this message and hearing the hope that a transition is possible for them. You know, considering that I think probably before you actually made this conversion with your own farm, it just seemed like impossible.
It seemed impossible. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now we got them. We got Starlove, Holly and Davy Shockrell in Giddings, Texas. And then we've got Cindy and Richard Traylor in Huntsville, Texas. And then there's a farm in North Carolina that is, I think, going to come on board.
That's fantastic. So now what is your vision? What's the greater vision of what you're doing with RAP? You know, if we're looking at, like, say, 10 to 20 years into the future from now, what do you see happening?
Well, on rancheradvocacy.org, we have a standalone website, rancheradvocacy.org. We have a timeline there. And, you know, what I see happening is farmers coming into, because every farm that we work with are farms that want to work with us. I do not go out and look for farms. Just like I don't look for animals to rescue, they're everywhere. Animals need rescuing everywhere. People find me. The same thing with ranchers wanting to transition. If we don't have something they want, then I ain't trying to sell them on anything.
Mm, true.
I don't need to try to cook. You know, I'm just not doing that. I'm not trying to do that.
Right.
But I am trying to put RAP out there in such a way to where farmers are going to find it attractive.
There you go.
And so, you know, and if they want to transition, we're here to help them. And so on that timeline, see, this is 2020. I think in 2022, you know, we've got a timeline of so many farms being in America, being on board. I think it's 50 by 2022. But, you know, don't make me lie. Look on the website.
Okay.
And then by another year, you know, we plan on being in different parts of the world, you know, because so many other countries are wanting RAP in their country. And so we've got to kind of hit things on so many levels. You know, I see legislation in our government being normal. You know, right now the Agriculture Fairness Alliance, who, you know, I'm on the board of directors of, it's a organization that is all about lobbying and creating legislation to help turn, you know, the tide for the massive subsidies and the glut that's in our system, you know, with animal ag, because it's horrible. It's horrifying when you really realize that it didn't really matter, you know, how many animals you stop eating, you know, and that the world's going vegan if your government is subsidizing the farmers to breed and kill more animals. It's like, it doesn't even matter. And so we got to hit things on all sides. We've got to make sure we're hitting, you know, that people are getting it, they're going vegan, they're changing, plant-based foods are being created. You know, I see our farms that we're working with actually creating their own plant-based food products so they can be their own end user with the crops that they're growing. I see that happening. And I see more and more impact investors, green investors getting involved with these farms. I see RAP itself, you know, one day being an actual foundation, you know, to really help these farms. Right now we have funding through a great source that really believes in our work, that's helping us, you know, grooming us in this direction. You know, I see RAP, you know, really helping shape legislation. Already there is the At-Risk Farmers Act that is modeled after RAP. It's been in 35 offices in Congress already.
Nice.
And it's in the Senate this month. So the prayer is it becomes a bill. And so everyone out there needs to be shouting at the rooftops, you know, it's not just about going vegan. It's about lobbying, guys. We've got to get Capitol Hill involved.
Yes.
You know, we got to get this sick freaking system. You know, I don't want to say that I want to just, I don't like to fight anybody. If I tried to fight animal agriculture, I would not win. But I am a loudmouth. I want to end animal agriculture and I want to see it shut down. But I'm not fighting them to do that. I'm on a track to create a new system that's so attractive, that makes so much sense, that farmers and ranchers are going to go, well, this is a no-brainer. Why would I want to walk through 36,000 chickens in a 20,000 square foot shed with dead chickens left and right everywhere? Why would I want to cull chickens, kill them left and right, live in that stench, hardly make ends meet when I can grow mushrooms?
Yes, I love that. I love that alternative too. And that's so incredibly inspiring that you actually paint the picture of the future with the alternatives in place, as opposed to, you know, a lot of times I get the understanding from, you know, some of the people that come to Eating Like You Give a Damn, some members of the community that say, you know, I mean, it's just, they feel very pushed with the vegan message sometimes. And really what you're doing is creating a call, and you're creating this attraction method, which I think is so incredibly powerful, because you are making it very enticing by giving that alternative solution and showing how it's possible. That's incredibly powerful and inspiring. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure. It's the way it works. I mean, it's attraction, not promotion. If you're trying to promote something out there, you know, and all you come off as a freaking good promoter, who cares? Who gives a crap about that? Do I really think this will work for me? Are you a real person doing the real work in the world? And that's what we're doing with our farmers. We're doing the real work in the world. It's not easy. We get distress calls from our farmers. We're on the phone with them, crying with them, trying to figure things out. You know, I always say, you know, if you want to convert your farm, I will go to hell and back with you to do whatever I have to do to find the resources, the people, the money, whatever it is you need. I will be that conduit. If you don't want to, fine. You will eventually. And we're going to still be here.
Yes. Love that. You'll come around eventually.
Eventually you will. You're going to be looking around going, maybe that girl was right after all. Maybe that crazy rowdy girl was right after all.
Well, goodness, if you can get your husband to turn.
Yeah. Hey, that was a tough one.
Yeah. Well, you got your feet wet on that one for sure. And so now you got the ammo to help some more that, you know, just need a little extra shove or push, or just, you know, or not push, attract.
It's attraction. It really is. I mean, so much of our movement is we're so invested, our movement, in fighting. I see it all the time.
Well, that's in most social justice movements, isn't it?
It's a big fight. And I just see that the ones that really change are the ones that just beat to their own drum, and people are going to be attracted to that drum, and that's how real change happens. I mean, yeah, there's always going to be the people that need to fight, I guess. I mean, that's just not me.
Sure. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Not a fighter. I'm a lover for sure.
It's just not me. Yeah.
Yeah. I gotcha. Well, this has been an incredibly inspiring interview. We really appreciate you coming on. Now, a lot of members of the Eating Like You Give a Damn community, you know, have expressed their appreciation for all that you are doing. And I just would love to know, you know, for those who are not quite vegan yet, but they're vegan curious, or at least plant-based curious, you know, what advice do you have for those listeners who feel this sense of responsibility to do more for animals and the planet or their overall health?
Well, you know, the main thing is to be educated. The reason we don't make the decisions that we could make to make a difference is because we're educated to eat the wrong foods, to wear the wrong clothes, and just educate ourselves, because that in and of itself will help you make the right decisions. Watch those videos you don't want to watch, especially if you're still eating those animals. If you're eating those animals and you don't want to watch the video, well, then watch the video. I mean, it's so maybe then you'll stop eating the animals, you know, or wearing the fur or whatever. You know, that's what I had to do. I had to start doing the things that made me uncomfortable so that I could really make my own decisions instead of living my life through the lens of the system of animal ag. Education.
Very well said. Now, where specifically, Renee, can people find you to find out more about your initiatives?
We're all over social media on Facebook. We have Rancher Advocacy Program on Facebook now too. Rowdy Girl Sanctuary has been on Facebook for a number of years, and you know, we have a real growing following there of close to 25,000, I think, on Facebook. We have the same amount of following on Instagram, and we have Rancher Advocacy Program on Instagram. And we have a YouTube channel, Rowdy Girl Sanctuary's YouTube channel, which is where I also put the Rancher Advocacy Program videos. We have Twitter. And, you know, I'll tell you, I am very responsive to all your messages. You message me, it will be me answering. It will not be a machine. It will not be, you know, anybody else. It will be me. And we're going to have a summit, a wrap summit in Austin, Texas, in September. So it's going to be the wrap summit. We're going to be bringing together all of our farmers. We're going to be inviting farmers and ranchers to come and see and hear more. We're going to have plant-based industry leaders. We're going to have, you know, there'll be activists there. There'll be manufacturers there. We're just going to have a, we're going to have discussion about legislation. It's all going to be there at the, our hope is that it's going to be at the Westin in Austin, Texas in September of this year.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We've already got great sponsors.
Yay!
Yeah, we got like Miyoko's has sponsored it. Jane Unchained has sponsored it. Free From Harm, Feed Dog, and Veg Fund. So far we got 5 committed sponsors.
Well, that is so awesome to hear. And I'm really, really glad for listeners to hear that. So, man, thank you so much, Renee, for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, your experience, and with everything that you're doing in the world right now to make the world a better place. And listeners, be sure to follow Renee during those locations and find out more about that summit that she's putting together. Renee, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you so much, guys. And if you want to help, become a member.
If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button in your podcast player and leave us a review on iTunes. Those reviews really go a long way in helping us reach more people who would like to hear what we dish about on this show. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for participating in that. Also, I want to hear from you. Drop me a comment below if you're watching from Facebook and tell me what you think of the format. Do you like having a place to see the guests as they're being interviewed and to have a spot to be able to come and actually watch the replays? I really want to know. Throw me a high five emoji if you do. And you can also email me with any suggestions for the show. Stephanie@eatinglikeyougiveadamn.com. And you can also follow me on social media, on Instagram and Facebook @eatinglikeyougiveadamn for show updates. Don't forget to follow Renee as well. Thank you so much for hanging out with me and Renee today. And until next time, veg on, rebels.